The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back, confidants, to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know anything. And this is a very special episode. This is a very special episode for many reasons. One, because this is the most famous guest we've ever had on this podcast. Number two, because it's a dear friend of mine who I've been waiting to interview for a very long time. Number three, because it's Monday the 17th, which 17 is my lucky number, but that's not a part of this. I will have just turned 30 yesterday.
Woo!
And my book is officially out for pre-sale.
Woo!
That I care a lot more about. Like, age is just the number, honey, right? And I find myself really caring about ageism as I get older. But go order my book. It's only $17.99. It's the love of my life. I've never seen more commas in my life than I have in the last week of editing it.
I'm gonna buy it.
Thank you, Carly Chaikin. Our guest this week. I'm super excited. Actually, you don't have to buy it. You're on the PR list, so don't buy it.
No, I like want to buy it.
Tell people to buy it. That would be more valuable.
Okay, I will.
Oh my God, confidants, I'm so excited to introduce you to my friend, Carly Chaikin. You may know her from many a things. She was a star, just an absolute star in the ABC hit show Suburgatory. She also was a star, just an absolute standout star in the critically acclaimed mental health show, Mr. Robot, and my favorite, a star in the Miley Cyrus movie, The Last Song, from like 2000, I don't even remember what year it was. Hi, Carly. Thanks for doing this. You're my friend.
Oh my God. Can you just introduce me like that everywhere you go?
Yeah. I'm just going to be like a little banner trumpet boy. Like, Carly has entered the building. So it's really funny. I want to tell the confidants really quick. We've actually known each other a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A long time. And we've recently gotten even more connected because of the RV situation, which confidants, the Justice Jamboree is being built in Carly and Ryan's garage. Yeah. Which that's a big deal, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
We actually do have a very crazy... Am I close enough?
Yeah.
We have a very meet cute. Is that a thing?
Yeah, our meet
we
cute.
Have a very crazy meeting friendship story.
You tell it, and then I'm going to jump in where I think is the pivotal big moment.
Here we go. So, do I like look at the camera and tell them?
You can
them?
Look wherever you want. You and me.
So, when Kelsey made her shit girlfriend say video.
In 2010.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually, no, when, didn't, I think the last song came out in 2010.
Oh, it might have.
Yeah.
So long ago. We were 20 or 19 or something. That's crazy.
Crazy. So she made that video. I thought obviously it was the funniest thing in the face of the planet.
Biggest boner I've ever had in my life.
If you haven't watched it, go watch it.
Still holds up, I guess.
It does. And yeah. So you should make one for now.
Oh my God. Like a 2020
version?
Yeah,
because there would be different things.
Totally different. And like, it would be like a lesbian couple.
Uh-huh. You should totally do a new version.
We should. And I bet you it's like a 10-year anniversary too, because it's 2020. And
oh my God.
I think it's
brilliant.
In like October or something.
Okay.
Great.
Done.
We have a new project.
Just wait.
All right. See you guys. That's the episode. We got to go.
Done.
Just kidding.
So I watched that video and I tweeted being like, who is this? This is the funniest thing ever.
So nice. I was freaking out.
And then you responded and I was freaking out.
Oh my God. We're fangirling each other's dicks. Yeah. I love it.
And then I think we like met up and like got dinner.
Yep. And I was like, oh my God, this bitch is crazy just like me.
Mm-hmm. And then we just became friends.
Yeah.
And then you randomly did a guest spot on Suburgatory.
Oh my God. Like one of my only TV appearances.
But she's like convinced I got her that job and I had nothing to do with it. I didn't even know about it.
Deadass thought that Carly was like, hire my friend for this like walk-on role because she's my friend. And I totally, until you told me like 2 weeks ago you had nothing to do with it, this whole time I've believed.
What?
That's how I got that job.
I literally had nothing to do with it.
That makes me happy and worried because for some reason my brain told me that, but it was so fun to come on set because Suburgatory was like a huge show for ABC and that was like your early 20s and that was your first big TV.
That was my first TV show.
Yeah, like
my
big deal.
Any TV job.
Like you did what everyone comes to LA to do. Like you were making it. So yeah, I did a stint. I did a 1 day thing on your show, and then I asked you to be in my web series, where you played like the opposite, better version of me. Like
I think that was before Suburgatory.
Was it?
Yeah, because I didn't have blonde hair yet.
Oh, wow. I love that you can tell the stages of your life based on what hair you had.
Mm-hmm.
So we like kept in touch and stuff. And, you know, you were working. YouTube was just becoming a thing. And then here's where I want to jump in and become the pivotal moment. Okay. I believe everything happens for a reason.
Duh.
And I believe the reason why I dated my ex-boyfriend was actually so that your relationship could become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I introduced Carly, I brought Carly out to meet one of my guy friends who was a friend of my boyfriend at the time.
Well, let me jump in.
Okay.
You came to do Suburgatory and then so that kind of reconnected us again. Mm-hmm. And then I was doing a show at UCB and was like, you need to come.
And you were great. You did the like monologue thing. Anyone that knows UCB comedy.
You brought Scott, your boyfriend, and you guys were like, we're going to hook you up with our friend Schiff, who lived across the street from me. And so he came over. We became platonic friends.
It was not a match.
But we hung out all the time.
I think aesthetically, I was like, you're both little tiny humans. You would be cute together.
Yeah, we are very much alike. And it's a very good friendship match.
There you go.
But so that got me. So then I like knew those people.
Yeah.
And then one day we were like, let's go bowling. And we all went bowling, and Ryan came.
You're now fucking fiancé, bitch. Yeah. Yeah, you see that bling? You see that shit? That's going to break the camera lens, dog. So, like, our friend Schiff will claim.
No, it's all thanks to you.
Thank you. Okay, I would just like to insert myself as that because I believe I went through all the hardship and strife of that relationship so that you could have yours.
Thank you. Seriously.
You're so welcome. I love anything I can do. No, so now you're dead ass gonna get married to Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
I know.
That is so crazy.
I know.
But like you guys have been together for a long time.
We've been together for 6 years.
And he's like
over 6 years.
He's kind of in the industry he's very much in the industry, not on the talent side. He works on the directing unscripted side. He's multifaceted. Love that guy. He actually shot some of my earliest YouTube videos before you guys. Oh my God. That skit was genius.
So good.
I think I submitted that one for my SNL packet.
So good.
You were like, oh no, why?
No, it was so good.
Instead of sham wow, it was sham and it like kind of did the job. It was a mess. But Ryan's like in the industry, but in a different facet of like what you do. And I think that that's really, really cool and unique that you guys have found a way to make your relationship work because the industry is so messy.
Mm-hmm.
And like you guys are just so normal. And then when you got Robot, Mr. Robot, okay, the Mr. Robot, yeah, it was shooting in New York. And his show, he was an assistant director on Project Runway, also shot in New York. But, like, still, that schedule is just not normal or, like,
no.
It's just, like, crazy how you were able to make that work.
It was. I remember, like, the first year we were dating, I went out to New York with him for when he was shooting Runway. And I was, like, I want to get a job that shoots in New York. And then I did. And so we were both there. I was there for longer than him. But I could never date someone that wasn't in this industry.
Yeah.
But I could never date like an actor.
No. I feel like everyone says that. They're like, you have to have someone get it. Like you have to know like your schedule or like giving up time or just like about time management in that regard to your craft. but not a fucking actor.
No. I'm like, feel bad for him that he has to date me.
No, but you're so normal, which is really cool. And I guess that can kind of segue a little bit into the theme of this episode. Like,
I have no mental issues.
None at all. The vague umbrella of this episode, not only being about my book pre-order, but like launching off into a conversation about mental health in media. Because Robot, which by the way, I find that industry people just say the second name of the word. They don't say the full name of the show, like Runway and Robot.
Mm-hmm. Which if you haven't seen, you can watch on Amazon Prime.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Wait, did Amazon Prime always own it?
No, it was on USA, but now it's on Amazon Prime.
Is that where I watched it? I must have watched it on Amazon Prime. Was that a lot of money? If Amazon Prime buys it, or does it not matter? You don't have to say
anything. Doesn't matter to me.
Oh, really?
I didn't get any of it.
Copy that. So when the other thing I didn't even say about the leg of your relationship is like you are actively involved in the mental health space as well. Like I don't really know a lot of industry people that are as like vocal and actually putting their money where their mouth is or their time where their mouth is. I don't think that's a phrase. But like you and I both work under the same like nonprofit umbrella company, NAMI. I always call it NAMI and I forever will. The National Alliance on Mental Illness. That's where like the proceeds from my first merch line went. That's where I think, I don't know. Anytime I have to donate, I pick NAMI. And you also work with NAMI, and serendipitously, Ryan, your fiance's dad is involved in NAMI, and it's just like this whole beautiful clusterfuck of love. So like, tell us how you're fucked up, what's wrong with you, why are you involved in the mental health space to begin with?
Well,
where do I start?
Where do I begin? I mean, who isn't fucked up, right?
I'll wait. Name one.
Like, somebody call me. Yeah. I think I always like, I mean, since I was young, suffered from like depression, anxiety. Mm-hmm. As I've gotten older, it's gone. And I've done like, oh God, so much fucking work and therapy and blah, blah, blah. It's gotten like obviously a lot better. And I don't feel like I really suffer from those things anymore. But I also, you know, have been surrounded in my life by some crazy people.
We're all like crazy.
We all have.
Here. Yeah.
I think all of us have family members.
Yeah.
Or know someone.
Right.
And I just think that it's like the most important thing there is. Everything starts and ends with your mental health.
True. It's like activism, cute. Environmentalism, great. We can't do any of that if our shit's fucked up and we can't get out of bed in the morning.
You can't. I mean, you can't have relationships. You can't have a job. Like that. You can't do anything if you don't. Yeah. If you don't have that. So, and I think that it's something that people like don't focus on enough.
Totally.
Everyone's like, you know, get your body fit, but no one's like, get your mind fit.
Yeah. What is the fucking, well, we know what the fucking craze is. It's society, systemic advertising issues. Mm-hmm. We know why. They don't want us to feel good about our brains because then we stop buying bikinis.
Right.
I wanted to ask you something you said about like kind of growing out of it, which I think is so interesting for a couple reasons. Because one, oh, I felt that burp coming for like 10 minutes. One, I feel like when you're in the worst of it, you feel like there's never going to be a day when you feel better, right?
Oh, yeah.
I also feel like anytime someone has told me, like, it gets better, I'm like, fuck you. But then in my book, over and over again, I'm like, I know you don't want to hear this, but, like, hold on one more day. Just one more day. And then you'll hold on another day. And then you'll see, like, all these amazing things you wouldn't have gotten to see had, you know, you not waited to feel better. So growing out of it is an interesting, like,
well, I will say, I think I definitely didn't grow out of it as much as I like worked my fucking ass to get out of it. Yeah. It wasn't like I just got older and things went away.
No, it's not like childhood asthma where you're like, that was weird.
Which
it's
I did
like,
have.
Me too. But I grew out of it. Yeah. And I'm fine now.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It's like you did the work at an age that was a perfect age to do it at because. And then, oh my God, you add like the industry on top of that. Fucking, I can't believe you got out of it alive.
Well, I'm so lucky that, you know, I didn't start acting until the last song, which I did when I was 19.
Wow.
And I've been in therapy since I was like fucking 13 or some shit. So
yeah.
I'm so lucky that I kind of like got my shit together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we say that loosely.
Yeah.
Because look at us, you guys. This is going to get demonetized purely for my nipples.
Got my shit together enough to be able to do what I do.
Yeah.
But then I think also starting to have a career really did help me.
Yes. Accountability.
Yeah. And value. Just feeling like I had a purpose and that
so
I had
important.
Something to lose.
Ah, it's so important.
Because
mm-hmm. if you just have everything kind of given to, I'm speaking from a personal point of view. When you're just a spoiled fucking brat, like I always struggle with the idea that I don't know how much I ever really struggled as far as what the American life is like, right? Like I grew up in an upper middle class home. My college was paid for. I never freaked out about bills until I was older. And because of that, I feel like my body came up with a bunch of, because my basic needs were met, my body was like, oh, we're going to give you a whole other fucking swath of shit to deal with since you're like skirting by here. And I wonder if like at all you can identify with the idea of what you said of like purpose and accountability and a reason to show up every day has something to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, are we segueing into like I'm a spoiled?
No, I just mean like you having a job probably less than like becoming famous was more like, oh my God, I'm living for
when
a
I was,
passion.
When I was younger, I didn't give a shit because like what I was going to get my phone taken away, my car taken away. Like that sucked, but who cares? Like I had nothing to keep my shit together for.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started working and, you know, being an actor was always like my biggest dream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I never did it before, but that's a whole other story.
When did that become like your biggest dream? What age?
I think when I was like 13.
Mm.
I was just talking about this the other day. Out of nowhere, I just was like.
Universe.
I had like a line in a camp play. And for some reason I was like,
that's always what it is.
Yeah. I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
I had a solo and Once Upon a Mattress. And I knew in that moment I was meant to be.
I think I brought someone water and was like, this is for you. And then was like, oh my God,
I crushed that.
Yeah. And I just knew was like, and I never did plays. I played sports, but so everybody thought I was, and I grew up in LA, so everybody thought I was like psycho, but I just, I knew that's what I was going to do. But so once I started doing that, I like had my purpose and I was like, this means so much to me. Like, I don't want to lose it. Like, I don't want to be like doing drugs and like doing all this shit and like fucked up and like not be able to
like
fulfill that. Yeah. And like, I have a career now to lose.
And it's like it weirdly makes getting up on the hardest days still like you're actually able to get up. Like the days when I would have nothing on my schedule, I would just stay in
like
bed.
Like right now.
Right? And sleep.
I'm still
and
in
like,
my pajamas.
But like giving myself something to do now, right? So like the RV, right? I'm here. You guys, I've been at Carly's house every day for the last month now.
And what did I tell you when it first started? I was like, let me help you. I need something to make me feel like I have a purpose
and
right now.
Like when you heard about Soraya's case, you immediately were like, jump on the phone. How can I help? Like, who can I introduce you to? And actually your connections through Ryan and your people got us a bunch of pitch meetings for the documentary. So like, even if it wasn't a direct, like, whatever, I'm going to produce this. You understood the severity and the importance of Soraya's story. And you were also like, oh, by the way, I have like a giant driveway, come over. And I don't think you realized when you said that you were going to get what you got with me.
I couldn't be happier.
I get to use their Olympic sized swimming pool every day. And if you don't live in LA, you don't understand how fucking valuable that is. I just go back there and flop in and I feel like Paris Hilton. I'm just like, oh, this is how the other half lives. But I want to bring something up.
That you broke the raft.
This was me admitting, by the way, when I jumped into your pool the other day, I didn't even jump in. I was like plopping myself into the raft. My ass popped through the bottom of her raft. Oh, it's coming tonight, the new one.
To be fair, there was already a rip in it.
Okay, I'll take that. I have to bring up something that I weirdly think might play into something about like your mental health, mm-hmm. which is your savant ability to paint. Ooh. Carly Chaikin art, or whatever the fuck your Instagram is. What is it?
Carly Chaikin art.
Oh, there you go. You paint like, what the fuck? You paint like shit that you're just like, whoa, this must have been like an artiste, like a French man sitting on his balcony for the last 20 years. That was the most weird accent. But like your painting is unreal. It's unreal.
Thank you.
And what the fuck? How did that start? How did you get so good at it? And like, you have an entire wing dedicated in your house to like a painting.
You're
art
making
realm.
Me sound so rich.
You're welcome. No,
my Olympic-sized pool.
In
my
Los
wing.
Angeles, if you have a pool, fuck off. You're rich. What the fuck with the painting?
First of all, it also drives me nuts because It's whatever. I have a whole process. Talk about mental.
But that's like what I'm talking about. Like that painting part of your brain has got to be like a filter for something. Because
yeah,
people don't
I've
you
always
can't just paint like that.
I've painted and written before I've done anything. That I've done my entire life. And when I was younger, I like the third floor at my dad's place I had decided to make into an art studio and just trashed it. And so he was like, okay, so he ripped up the floors and put in like just vinyl floors yeah. and made it a chalkboard wall for me. And
so
I just
cool.
had that space to destroy. And so that's any place I go now, I have to have an art studio.
But how, like, when were you like, oh, I'm better than like a kid who hangs up their fucking shit on the refrigerator? Like,
actually,
look,
in, I don't know why I remember this, but in like second grade, we had this project where we had to like water paint like a tulip. And I remember like the next day the teacher thought mine was hers.
Oh.
And I was
my
like,
God.
That's mine.
And she was like, shut up, kid, it's mine.
Yeah. She's like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my mom had always put me in like art classes. And then in middle school, the art teacher put me in the high school painting class. And that was the first time I ever oil painted.
Holy shit.
And then I went to Brentwood Art Center, mm-hmm. which I saw just closed down, which is the saddest thing ever.
No.
And that was like a workshop style class where everyone would do their own thing. And there was a teacher that would like walk around and help.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of my only training was like stuff she
so
would tell me.
That's not normal. Like that's what I don't think you get is like what the training you had, like your brain just did that. And that's not normal. Like, I seriously think that, like, the way we have, like, once-in-a-lifetime poets and astrologers and shit, like, you have that painting gift. And
my
that's
God, you're so nice.
Weird. Like, how the fuck did you get that?
I don't know. It's not like I sit down to paint and all of a sudden that comes out. It's from
it's like
a lot of torture
right.
and, like, redoing and starting. But, no, art has always been my biggest passion and like the thing I care about the most mm-hmm. and like art with kids and like teaching art and all of that stuff like that. If I wasn't an actor, I would be a teacher.
And you work with NAMI and you help teach painting classes
yeah.
to people who live with mental health disorders. And do you feel like painting helps you survive a bit, like manage your mental
health? I really do think that art could save the world.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it sucks because I was supposed to go to Washington, D.C., actually,
what?
And then fucking Corona hit. But to, like, advocate for the arts. But I do think, you know, so I before all this, would teach at Inner City Arts to, like, younger kids,
yeah,
anywhere from
amazing.
First to eighth grade. And then I have my NAMI art class, and that's adults. And the difference that it makes in them, like, is so, you can't even, like, fathom it. And,
yeah.
like, what it does for them, for their self-esteem, to calm
wow.
them down, to, like, everything. It's just, it's, like, beyond incredible.
So for you, is it as therapeutic or is it like turned into a little bit more torturous, like you say?
I'll be like, you know what? I'm just going to go paint. And then I like leave my studio being like, fuck.
So poetic. Like, I'm just going to go paint. I'm going to like Rachel McAdams, like in a naked sheet. Like,
yeah. And then I'm like being like, fuck this shit.
Yeah. But I think that that's like part of the process, right? Yeah. Is I feel that way about film. Like whenever I'm making something, I'm just like, why did I start that? Like, you're a dumb bitch. You know, every time you start something and then you fucking can't, like, oh, that's part of the process of art.
Teaching myself, like, you know, color. People are gonna be like, shut the fuck up. No, it's like the most complex. I was telling you this, like, people spend their whole lives learning about color, but that's crazy. Something that I like fully taught myself that I'm still teaching myself.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of mental health, if I'm ever like having anxiety or like can't stop like ruminating, spiraling about something, the way I like distract myself is I'll like look around the room and pick something and see how I'd mix that color.
Oh my God. That's a really nice coping mechanism.
Yeah.
I would never in a million fucking years use that as like a tool, 'cause I just don't think that way. Yesterday I was having like a really bad ruminating moment because of like some just stupid drama that like didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. But in my head, I came here being like, let me go distract myself. And I just could not stop replaying the conversation in my head over and over again, different ways I could have responded, should have responded. And I'm like, why can't my brain just stop? Like, I'm painting.
The weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I put on a podcast, I put on music, and I was like, I just have this spiral problem. Like, mm-hmm. as soon as it like goes over the edge, it's like a roller coaster, and I just have to ride the wave. And what stopped it actually was writing it down. Because I was like trying to put it in my hands, like,
no,
paint and listen to something else. And it was like,
I write everything. Mm. I use, like, I have literally 500 notebooks filled to the brim from when I was like young until now.
Oh God, they're so embarrassing to look back at.
Oh my God, I'm like, this black rose like represents my soul. Like, so, you know.
Yikes.
But now I, on my phone and my notes, like, I just write everything. If I can't sleep at night, my other like OCD thing that happens to me is like when I get anxiety, I'll get songs stuck in my head.
Ooh, the earworms.
And it's like to the point where I've like gone 2 days without sleeping because of it. It's like an actual thing. Yeah.
Don't go on TikTok then, because those songs are fucking addictive. So then let's talk about Mr. Robot a little bit, because obviously that show is based on mental health. Like, I don't, It went for so many seasons. I feel like if you haven't seen it, but no, because you can watch it on Amazon Prime. So I won't give too much away, but it's a show about a guy who's a hacker who wants to right the wrongs of big corporations. And you play a character. I still don't know how much I should reveal. You play a character in it that's very vital to the main character's relationship. And I think you both as main characters, you know, there's a couple, it's like an ensemble thing. Everyone kind of has their own like mental health disorders, quirks. Like, I hate saying quirks because it's like not a thing. Quirk to be like schizophrenic, but that's not it.
So
not,
quirky.
Not the spoiler. Yeah. So quirky. I'm like, so schizo. Fuck you if you say that shit. But what was it like, A, getting involved with the project and realizing like, oh shit, this is going to be something that like you have to get right. Right? Like, you can't fuck that up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in this last season, I had like a really big panic attack. And in, you know, season two, I also had one. But I think people afterwards, it was so amazing to see people be like, I've never seen someone have like looks like a real panic attack on camera, which one, I'm like, what are they doing? Two, I'm like, have they never had one?
Yeah, right.
Like, it's really not
that
difficult.
Like, you don't know unless you've had one. Like, people be like, oh my god, I'm about to have a panic attack, and I'm like, no,
you wouldn't
you're not.
You wouldn't be able to say that if you were actually gonna have a panic attack because you can't breathe.
It's the same thing as like, I don't know, a migraine or a seizure. It's like you have no idea what they feel like until you've had one, and so for you, it's like, yeah, I know because I know. And that's what makes me like the person to be this character.
Yeah. But I mean, it was like the most incredible thing ever to be a part of something like that. And seeing the, you know, when it's like, we're not doing brain surgery here making TV shows, but to actually see like the legitimate impact that it has had on so many people in regards to like mental illness, of feeling like they're not alone, of feeling like we've had so many people tell stories about a student they've had or someone they've had that like discovered Mr. Robot, discovered Elliot, the main character, and then felt like they could do something and that they didn't have to be debilitated by their mental illness.
Wow.
And, you know, a big thing that he suffers from is social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
That's something that's not a spoiler that you get right away from the pilot.
Yeah. And you know, I think that like Sam Esmail, our creator, obviously like has experience with all of that too. Yeah. And it's just written real.
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, clearly, I don't know what the writer's room is like, but clearly someone who has experienced, whether themselves or in their life or has done the work, gets it, because it's been said it's like the most accurate representation of certain, you know, disorders or struggles that is out there in media, which I think is really important, because you see like, I don't know, half-assed storylines, or you see like a show now that's on Netflix that's completely the character's entire identity, and it's like, that I just haven't seen anything like Mr. Robot where they're able to play it so realistically. And I think that's really important, because you say it's not brain surgery, but like, you know, I used to say the same thing about working at BuzzFeed. I'm like, I work at BuzzFeed. Like, at the end of the day, who cares? And it's like, well, no, that shit, like, our media shapes our society. Mm-hmm. Like, if we didn't have a character like Elliot or like Darlene to point to when we're describing certain things, like, I don't know that people would even know these certain diagnoses exist, right?
Yeah, no, it's been really incredible. It's been just seeing the response from so many people being like, watching the show has changed my life. It's like,
it changed my life.
Fully. Like, how, as an actor and like artist, couldn't ask for anything more than to like actually be a part of something that's impactful in that way. But that's, you know, with NAMI, that's why I felt like it was so important for us to take advantage of it, of that. And I kept, you know, for the longest time trying to get them to put at the end of episodes, if you need help, contact this and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But, you know, I hosted like the NAMI walks, and this past year we had a Mr. Robot booth.
Yay.
And I got them to, USA to, and NBCU to donate. So thank you.
Hey, NBC. I like them too.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that just, you know, in the same way with like diversity of like mm-hmm. not seeing someone that looks like you mm-hmm. or like you feel like you can relate to on TV. So many people, I think, have never had a character that they can relate to so much mm-hmm. that also wasn't a character that's like, you're in a loony bin because yes. you're so great. Like just like an exaggerated
right.
version, but of a real yeah. person.
And you know, it's like, I struggled with this in my book too, about writing, like when I say the word crazy or psycho or psychotic, and like, I've always said that being like, I know what that's like. Like I've experienced crazy or psycho or whatever. Like I know what psychosis and mania looks like very intimately. And like the word is, I think, still going through that phase that I think a lot of words are going through right now of like, is it appropriate to use? Are we like stigmatizing by saying like, that's crazy, when we really mean like, that's incredible. And I'm like, shut up. I'm allowed to say these things a little bit. But I wonder, like, for you as an actor who knows about mental health very deeply and like experiences and knows what this shit looks like, how did acting it affect you? Because like your character ain't all sunshine and daisies and roses. Like it ain't like going to work on Blue's Clues every day. Like you're going to do some fucking depressing shit like every episode. And so I wonder how just prep wise and like your body did that.
It wasn't easy.
It wasn't easy.
It was not easy. No, I mean, it's like a joke how many times I've like cried and like freaked out. You know, it's a very dark character. It's a very dark show. You know, and I've had days where like I would leave work and just, Rami and I both, like, we had this scene in the finale of season 3 that was, like, so traumatizing. Mm. We both, like, got back home and neither of us, like, left our couch the entire weekend. And I was just, like, so fucked in the head from it. Mm.
What do you do?
I don't know. I mean, season 1 was much harder because it was newer. Mm. And I had never played a character like right. that. And I think it's like, it's really hard to kind of like separate and detach because like you do have to make it so real. Mm-hmm. So it does have to like,
it is real when you're
right
doing it.
And it's yeah. like when you literally, you have to put your body in a state of trauma constantly. Mm. Damn. And like stay in it. Especially,
your therapist must be paid.
I know. We always joke that I'm like, you guys should be paying for my therapy.
Honestly, dead ass, I feel like they should. Well, you think about like Heath Ledger, right? Like that character literally killed him. I mean, we don't know what kind of like disorders of addiction or whatever he had just built into his chromosomes. But you, like, I laugh when you say like, I don't know what I did, because I really wonder like how your body is able to differentiate like fake trauma of acting.
It can't, because right. if that's, I think that's what makes you a good actor. And like when you know, it's like we're doing this scene that I was saying, and it's like I was sweating from every single surface of my body. Because I was like shaking from the inside, because I like put myself in this I'm like, cool job. Like
what the
like
fuck?
I get paid to like literally be traumatized. But you put yourself into such a state like that. And I think, you know, I think a few things, it definitely takes a second when you're done shooting to like come back to the real world. It is hard to like, you know, have your like normal friendships because you just feel in this whole different world.
Yeah.
And you're just also like so sucked into it.
In but a relationship. Like I'm sure Ryan would come home some days and be like, I ain't even going to touch that.
Well, I'd always say, I'm like, thank God it was great shooting in New York and that he wasn't always there, because I did need that like
space.
Yeah. The space to just like come home and like get into bed, or like just sit in the shower and be like, oh
my God. But did you have anything like special, or like a treat or a food or a TV show or anything that like just got you out of your own head?
I binge watched Game of Thrones this last summer.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Wait, had you never watched
it? I had never seen it. I was always so against it. And then I was
why are you against it?
I don't know. I was like, that's so stupid.
Because
like,
everyone's obsessed with it.
And it was just like the period. Like, I just thought I was like flying dragons. Like, go fuck off.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God, it was so good.
You saw it and you were like, game over. Game of Thrones over.
It was, I like didn't sleep. But no, I think that for me, the way like of getting out of it is just like coming back to your body and like
physically,
and which is also like my way to get into it. But of just being like, I'm Carly, and like,
oh my God, you're literally describing like exactly what I do when I have dissociation, like usually in super high anxiety, like right before I know I'm about to have a panic attack. I'll disassociate, and in my like tips in the book is like, tell yourself about yourself. So like, I'm Kelsey Lee Darrow. My favorite color is green. Mm-hmm. My favorite food is Cinnabons. My favorite movie is this. Like, and then actually like my number one is like putting your feet on the ground and feeling the bottom of your soles on the ground, being like, that is
exactly
the ground.
Exactly what I do.
Oh my God.
And it's actually what I do to like physically before I start shooting. Is like tapping and like body and then feet on the ground and like
tapping getting Darlene into you a little bit.
Of just like getting, waking up your body and of like getting connected to your body. But yeah, I always say like to stay present. I'm like, this is my leg. This is my hand. Oh like my I'm God. On the couch.
That's so funny. But I guess like.
Guess it works.
I know, right?
Like, we're both geniuses.
Way, right? Like I'm basically a doctor. In a way though, it doesn't feel that weird to do such a thing, because in those moments of like disassociation or trauma or anxiety, high anxiety, your body feels like your biggest enemy. And I think rearranging that thought pattern of like, no, this is like my home. This is like my sacred space. This is my vessel. This is my best friend. Like, I have to be really kind to my body, because in those moments of like super bad disassociation, I feel like, God damn it, brain, why the fuck are you doing this shit right now? Like, I never have fucking time. You never come at the convenient times. Da 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 da. And I get so mad. And I think really like making a conscious decision, which isn't easy and takes a lot of practice, probably the same way of like dropping into a character takes a lot of practice, is like you have to like your body, the relationship to your body is so important.
Definitely. That reminded me of like quitting smoking.
Oh, we have got to talk about that. But you know what? We've been talking for so long, I almost forgot to read our ad for this week, which ties in beautifully to our theme of mental health this week, which is, you know, I'm going to talk about better health. Y'all, you already know, because I don't want anything to interfere with your happiness confidants. I want you to know that BetterHelp is an app that you can get affordable online therapy 24/7. Everything is absolutely confidential. It's not self-help, okay? It is professional counseling. You never have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room ever again. Think about that. Oh, they're always the same. They always have like air diffusers and highlights magazines and like weird paintings on the wall.
Like opera playing in the background.
And you're like, what the fuck? This is bad. You don't have to do that with BetterHelp. And I want you to know that so many people have been using BetterHelp during this time in the world that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states, which now we have like 51 states, I think, because Washington, D.C., whatever, that's a different conversation. They help with things like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem. And the best part about it is that it is affordable. And y'all know that I believe access to therapy that is fair and not privileged is like my number one goal in life. That's why I love BetterHelp. So I want you all to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/CI. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/CI. Let's talk about you quitting smoking, because that's like mental health. That's like a tick thing that you definitely leaned on. You little crutch crutch.
It's my favorite thing to talk about because it's the best thing that's ever happened
you
to me.
You smoked
so
a lot.
Much.
I took a dramatic pause because that's
it
how
deserves.
Much you smoked.
I mean, yeah. It deserves like a dramatic pause that lasts like an hour.
Like an Oscar-worthy dramatic pause. Yeah.
It's funny because when I tell people I was a smoker, they're like, oh, you know, like, yeah, me too.
And you're like, no, bitch.
No.
I ate the cigarettes. You have no idea.
I opened my eyes in bed and smoked a cigarette.
Which was crazy because I remember I've told you this a million times. Like, I would see you do it and I would be like, you're so young and so pretty. Stop it.
Oh, it was like I would get up from dinner with my dad and go outside and have a cigarette. Like I was a fucking smoker. Nobody ever thought I would quit.
Ever.
Ever. I never thought I would quit. I never had a desire to quit.
Mm.
And then.
What was it? I can't believe Ryan was like, I'm a date a girl. I'm gonna marry this bitch who smokes this much.
Oh my God.
What a weird trait. I feel like that's such a turnoff.
I mean, he was a smoker. He still does his Juul.
Yeah, fair, fair, fair.
Which is like,
everyone does that shit.
But let me just tell you, anybody that's like smoking a Juul, thinking that they're not a smoker, it's the same fucking thing.
You fucking elitist.
You are a smoker. Like, I don't know.
You're better than us, okay?
No, and you're like hurting yourself just as much.
True.
They are going to come out in fucking 10 years or sooner being like, oops.
They already have, I think.
Yeah,
already,
that shit. If anybody thinks that like they quit smoking.
Because they Juul.
But they're Juuling. You did not quit smoking.
Tell them, sis.
Preach, bitch. You did not quit smoking. Don't fool yourself.
But you did.
I did. I read this book, The Easy Way to Stop Smoking by Alan Carr. Changed my life. Never in a million. I had tried Chantix when I was younger, which is
the pill, right?
It was the worst fucking thing I've ever done. It made me not want to smoke.
I even had that.
But it made me talk about mental, like, I was like on the brink of suicidal.
Do they still put that out?
Yeah.
And did you feel like on the brink of suicidal because you didn't want to smoke, or it just made your
mood swings? No, they say, they're like, may cause suicidal thoughts.
Oh my God. And you were like, bing, bitch.
Yeah, I do.
Underline that shit.
Everyone. Yeah. Like it's not, I think it does in a lot of people. So
I have not heard about it in a while. So I feel like maybe it's not as like a much of a thing anymore.
I see commercials for it all
you
the time.
You do? Yeah.
They're like, don't quit cold turkey. Quit like slow turkey.
I feel like your disbelief of yourself quitting smoking is the same way I felt about drinking, that it would never happen. And then you did.
Yeah.
So you read the book and give us like a brief.
I had tried hypnotherapy. Wow. I had tried everything.
Cigarette, gum, patches.
Yep. And this one fucking book.
A book.
Praise be.
Praise
so good.
Be indeed.
And they say, they're like, do not stop smoking while you read this.
And you were like, hell yeah.
And I was like, okay, fine. You know what it was? I went on Amazon. I typed in quit smoking book because my best friend was like, you need to stop. And I was like, okay, I'll stop in the new year. I typed in quit smoking book. This book came up with 5 stars.
Yeah, like thousands of reviews.
And I was like, what the fuck kind of quit smoking book has five stars?
No one had ever told you about Alan Carr before?
No.
Bitch, you need new friends, including me, if I didn't tell you about that.
No.
Because I've heard about it. It's like miracle shit.
Miracle.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I just need to see what this is about. Yeah. And so I got it, and it's like, don't quit smoking. Just read this book. I promise by the end of it, you'll want to. And I literally was like gonna do it in the new year, and I didn't even want to wait that long, and so my quit date was 11/16/16, which is also lucky numbers. November 16th, 2016
was your last cigarette.
Whoa. Well, I guess it was technically on the 10th,
whatever.
Yeah.
But so the
I haven't
book,
had one puff. Wow. Nothing.
What's like, give us like the secret sauce of like just one little tidbit if you could.
Oh my God.
I know there's like the I think the basic structure is just like,
it makes you
don't right,
it makes you not want to be a smoker. Like it really just breaks it down to like what you're doing, and like these ideas that we like put on a cigarette of being like, well,
it's this
when
relief.
I'm stressed, yeah, or this or that. And it's like, no, it's really just a nicotine vessel, and you have a nicotine addiction.
And like you just want to get away. Like you're using this thing, this stick, as like an escape.
It's all a false sense of something, you know. It's like, it's all a lie.
Ooh.
And
that's deep, sis. It's all a lie.
It's all a lie. And the biggest thing was he was like, everyone's like, quitting smoking is so miserable and the worst thing ever. But he's like, why would anybody want to do that? It's actually like the best, most exciting thing.
That was drinking for me.
And it, I mean, I could, it changed my life in ways that I didn't even realize.
Yep.
And I could not be happier. Like my entire life was dictated around a cigarette. I didn't want to get on a plane. I didn't like want to do anything that could stop me from having my cigarette.
Oh my God.
And it like just freed up my life so much.
Do you feel better?
Beyond. And you know what was crazy was I quit in 2016 and then I went back to work for season 3 and I'll remember like on the first day or so, our DP came up to me and was like,
director of photography.
Yeah. and was like, I don't know what you did, but like your face looks so good. And like on camera, like, I don't know what changed. And I was like, I got the color back because I quit smoking.
And were people just like shooketh when you told them?
Beyond.
That's the thing is like, I think I was expecting everyone to like drop their food and like have like water fall out of their mouth when I'm like, I quit drinking. But people were just like, yeah, that's cool.
No, I think people were like, holy
shit. I know. I wanted a bigger like coming out moment. But I think that that's such a beautiful thing to maybe end on is like, I really like what you said that like all that shit is just like a coping mechanism to like getting to the deeper part of whatever the issue is or like whatever you're avoiding. And I think that like we all have those little things and you never want to admit when like society or like the right thing to do is right. Like people are like, you're gonna quit drinking, you're gonna feel better. I was like, yeah, okay. And I was like, oh shit, I do feel better. I do get up earlier. I do like have zest for life now. Like I believe alcohol was keeping a layer of like cloud over my life. And it's like I burst out of this fucking cloud and like into the sunshine. I was just like, why did I do that to myself for so long?
I had this moment like I went out on my fire escape like the night that I was going to have my last cigarette in Hollywood and was just like, this is it. But I like had this moment where I just was like, put my hand on my body and I was like, I'm so sorry for doing this to you.
Cause it's that like, makes me want to cry.
It's like, I fucking was like poisoning my body for so long without its like permission, you know? And it's just like, you get one body and one life, and it's just like, I'm so sorry that I was doing that to you.
That's a tearjerker, bitch. That's like really powerful.
But, right, it's like, you know, what you were of being in your body and of like appreciating it. Mm-hmm. It's like you're doing that. It's like you're, smoking, you're literally killing it.
And it's like every day, I think it would be so beautiful if everyone made space, just like 3 minutes a day to just like, go through and be like, thank you, tiny toes, for carrying me throughout the day. Thank you, giant calves, for being strong. Like, I wish we would all just connect to our bodies a little bit more. And that maybe that's the better wrap up than everything's a lie, is connect to your body a little bit more. Carly Chaykin, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
And more importantly, thank you for letting me borrow your house for a month.
Duh.
I'm never leaving.
Good.
Surprise.
Good.
Staying here forever. Where do you want to be found, if at all, or what would you like to promote, if anything?
You can find me on Instagram.
Oh my God.
At Carly Chaykin. My art Instagram. Yeah. At Carly Chaykin Art. Check it out.
Yay.
And watch Mr. Robot on Amazon Prime.
Look at that synchronicity.
Wow.
Confidants, please, please, please go pre-order the book. That would be the best birthday present for my 30th birthday you could ever give me. It's only $17.99. Buy it for yourself. Buy it for a friend. Don't forget to give this 5 stars. If you're going to give it less than 5 stars, please don't do it because I'm very sensitive. Don't forget, you can write to us at confidentlyinsecurepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at confidentlypod. We're doing giveaways. I'll probably do a book giveaway. Will you like sign something and give it away for this episode?
Sure. I don't know who wants
sign
it, but
this cup. You're going to sign a cup and we're going to give away. No, we'll figure out something. Thanks again.
Thank
you're the
you.
Titties. Bye, confidants. See you next week.